Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
We talk pretty regularly about the influences of old works of, well, fiction and mythology, religion, on Tolkien's writing. It comes up all the time. I'm sure you've noticed it. But in this episode today, this section of The Hobbit, we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. There are specific words that come up that point to a very specific tonal influence on the way that we should be perceiving the Eagles. And it's a subtle thing, but I will point it out. I want you to kind of keep this in mind as we're going through. And before we get to those sections, I want you to be thinking about the nature of angels. And I know oftentimes the Valar or the Maiar get referred to as angelic beings in Tolkien's mythology. And there's definitely evidence for that. It's something that I've actually probably said it myself in past episodes. But there's also another comparison to angelic beings. And I want you to think about biblical angels, the actual texts around biblical angels. And if you haven't studied them, we don't need to quote the specific text for you to understand what's going on here. In the Bible, when angels are referred to, most of the time, they are both angelic, they are messengers from God, but they're often referred to as also something to be feared. They're actually referred to more often in the Bible as being like the military force of God than anything else. And although they are on the side of good, they are something to be feared and could just as easily save you as smite you. They often descend from the sky, and the actual representation of angels, I'm sure you've probably seen, if you haven't, look up online the way that you would actually like represent a biblical angel. It's definitely not a dude with wings. It's something often with wings, but also floating in the sky with eyes and all sorts of weird shapes and stuff. It's often very, very strange. But the classical version of this becomes a dude with wings. But wings, eagles, there is a connection there. Descending from the sky, another connection. So keep that in mind as we go through this section of The Hobbit. There was a howl of anger and surprise from the goblins. Loud cried the Lord of the Eagles, to whom Gandalf had now spoken. Back swept the great birds that were with him, and down they came like huge black shadows. In the very first line of this section of the book, the eagles are referred to as huge black shadows, or at least they cast huge black shadows as they come down toward the wolves. They are something to be feared, especially by their enemies, the wolves, the goblins, And we have to remember that they are scary from the goblins' perspective. The goblins are fearful, and they are cowardly. So when they are confronted with an enemy like these great eagles, they cower and hide. They perceive this as a huge black shadow. We can't forget that even though goblins are evil creatures, that there are more evil creatures out there. Sauron commands respect through fear. So they fear the dark shadows as much as anything else. Even though they often lived within dark shadows, there were darker shadows. Think about the goblins that live in Moria, fearing the Balrog. The very next line talks about the wolves. It says that they yammered and gnashed their teeth. And this is biblical imagery. Gnashed their teeth is a phrase that means grinding one's teeth together. This is a phrase that goes all the way back to ancient Greece. In the Bible, this is used fairly commonly. In fact, in the book of Matthew, there are 6 different instances of the phrase gnashing of teeth, often in reference to people suffering or going to hell or those kinds of things. But this was a very common phrase. And at the time, it was seen as a great sign of disrespect or anger. And you can see how that would make sense in this situation. And the biblical references don't end here. They continue on. But the story continues, and the goblins yell, and they fling their spears in the air, and the eagles swoop down, again described in a dark rush of their beating wings, and smote them to the floor. You don't hear the word smote used very often. This is another word that shows up a lot in the Bible. And its definition means to strike with a firm blow. And to really hit home how scary these goblins are, he includes that their talons tore at the goblin faces. That's a pretty horrific description for a book that is aimed at a general audience. So the eagles fly down and they start seizing the dwarves, as it says in here. And seized, I think, is intentional for how we're supposed to perceive these. They don't lift them up. They seize them as if they are prisoners. And we'll get to that in a minute. And then, of course, it says here, poor little Bilbo was very nearly left behind again. He just managed to catch hold of Dory's legs. And this is another one of those moments where the tension is ratcheted up. And I have to look at these kinds of sections of the book, as I do some of the others, and I have to wonder, is this Bilbo exaggerating? Did he just barely make it? Is this for narrative tension? But is it maybe actually likely that it's both? It could be both. He's small. He was lower up on the tree. Maybe they didn't see him as well as the others. Maybe there were only so many of the eagles, and so they picked up the ones that were higher first. You know, any of those things could have explained this. But it also still feels like a little bit of exaggeration on Bilbo's side. Then the tension gets ratcheted up again. The eagles are circling, the wolves and the goblins are scattered. And then the flames about the trees sprang suddenly up above the branches. They went up in crackling fire. There was a sudden flurry of sparks and smoke. Bilbo had escaped only just in time. This feels like something out of an action movie, you know? It seems like Tolkien had a real sense of how to do this. Even in 1937, I mean, I can't think of too many action movies that have these kinds of escaping from fire scenes back in 1937, but here we are, and it sounds like something written for film. The eagles rise into the air, and then we get a release of this tension in a comedic section that both conveys the dire situation they're in, but kind of lightens the mood again. Bilbo moans, "My arms, my arms," and then Dory groaned, "My poor legs, my poor legs." This is another one of those scenes you could totally picture in your head as Bilbo is holding on for dear life and his poor arms are wearing out. And then we find out something interesting about Bilbo, and this isn't something that gets brought up very often. When you think about Bilbo's character and his personality, it's very unlikely that anybody brings up the fact that he's afraid of heights at a very deep level. It says here, at the best of times, heights made Bilbo giddy. And the definition of giddy is having a sensation of whirling and a tendency to fall or stagger, dizzy. which makes sense. That's how you feel when you're afraid of heights. He used to turn queer if he looked over the edge of quite a little cliff. So it didn't take much to make him feel like this. But Tolkien also uses the antiquated use of the word queer here. Queer used to mean something different than it does today. The original definition is strange, odd, peculiar, or eccentric. But in this section, it says turn queer, as if in this context, something being strange makes you feel uncomfortable. It's like this uncomfortableness that is coming into him from the situation, something like that. And it also says he had never liked ladders, let alone trees, never having had to escape from wolves before, another kind of comedic play on that situation. And I think this is supposed to be kind of funny. We're supposed to look at Bilbo and go, oh, unfortunately, he feels this way, but it's also kind of funny. Think about old cartoons with like Bugs Bunny or Mickey Mouse, and a character gets lifted in the air and they go, oh dear, and then their head spins and there's little lines around the top of their head. This is what this makes me think of. It even includes the reference to looking down between his dangling toes. It's kind of cute. But then we get this different view of the world. The dark lands opened wide beneath him, touched here and there with the light of the moon on a hillside rock or a stream in the plains. This section gives us a way of seeing the earth that most people at this point in history probably never had. Maybe because they were up on top of a mountain or something like that, they could kind of see a view similar to this. But think about it, 1937, not too many people had flown in planes, and I have to wonder, had Tolkien been in a plane at that point in his life? In World War I, were they using planes to transport people? Probably not very often. I mean, they were biplanes. They weren't very large vehicles at that point. By the 1920s, public transit by air was available, but I don't know if Tolkien would have been on an airline at that point in his life. So this particular view of the world from way up high is interesting in the way it's described. I'll read that again. Touched here and there with the light of the moon on a hillside rock or a stream in the plains. So I suppose you could imagine this, but it feels to me like something somebody has actually experienced. The next sentence says, the pale peaks of the mountains were coming nearer, moonlit spikes of rock sticking out of black shadows. I love that description. And then we learn that, summer or not, it seemed very cold. Of course it would, because you were way up high. So of course this makes sense, but it also ratchets up the uncomfortableness of the situation. We're continuing to see descriptions about Bilbo kind of suffering through the situation. He closes his eyes. He wonders how much longer this is going to happen or go on for. He starts to feel sick. And then the flight ends just before his arms give way. Again, ratcheting up that tension. This is about to end in failure, and it doesn't. And then they fall to the platform. They're on the Eagle's Eyrie. And they lay without speaking. And I love this line. It says, his thoughts were a mixture of surprise at being saved from the fire and fear lest he fall off that narrow place in the deep shadows on either side. The text is leading us to believe that he's still not necessarily safe, or at least he doesn't believe himself to be. And so the tension continues to be ratcheted up. And we're reminded he was feeling very queer. And this time he's not turning queer, he's actually feeling strange or odd. And then, as if to break the tension again, we're reminded how hungry he is, because they haven't eaten in days. But we get some more dialogue that's kind of funny. Now I know what a piece of bacon feels like when it is suddenly picked out of the pan on a fork and put back on the shelf. And of course, this is a way that Bilbo would relate to the world. He's thinking about food. He's thinking about home. He doesn't want to be in this terrible situation. He's scared for his life. He's starving. And then Dory answers, no, you don't. We get this argument, this like comedic argument between the two of them, because Dory's grumpy as well, because the bacon knows that it will get back in the pan sooner or later, and it is to be hoped we shan't. Also, eagles aren't forks. Like, what? Oh no, not a bit like storks. Forks, I mean, said Bilbo. And this reinforces Bilbo's mental acuity in this moment. His head is spinning. He cannot think straight. And he says storks instead of forks, which is funny because a stork is a big bird, but it's definitely not an eagle. And chances are an eagle wouldn't like to be compared to a stork. So there's a few different layers there. And in fact, in order to really hit home how uncomfortable Bilbo was and how, I don't know, just how much his head was spinning and he couldn't think straight, Tolkien writes, he wondered what other nonsense he had been saying, as if the entire time he was holding onto Dory's leg and saying all sorts of weird things because he was uncomfortable, which could be the case. But then we get this line, you ought not to be rude to an eagle when you are only the size of a hobbit and are up in his eyrie at night. This is forewarning us that Bilbo is not comfortable here, and he might still be in danger, in kind of a comedic, almost fairy tale kind of way. So then another eagle flies up, says that the Lord of the Eagles bids you to return your prisoners. Prisoners? Bilbo notices the use of this word prisoners, and then we get the description, the other seized Dory. You seize a prisoner. You don't lift a prisoner. You lift a friend. You pick up a friend or an acquaintance or somebody who needs your help. You seize prisoners. So everything that's being set up here is to lead us to believe that they are not out of the fire yet. In fact, maybe they're in an even worse situation. And this makes Bilbo think about being torn up for supper like a rabbit when his turn came, as if they were going to go through each of them. And I would imagine in this situation, he's probably remembering the situation with the trolls. The trolls wanted to eat them, and they were going to go through them in some sort of order. The eagles here might be doing the same thing. In fact, everything that seems to attack them wants to eat them. So why not the eagles? It would make sense. Then we get use of the word seized again. The eagle came back, seized him, meaning Bilbo, with his talons by the back of his coat and swooped off. Can you imagine being lifted by your coat? That probably doesn't feel very safe and secure. It would be one thing to be held in the eagle's talon gently, but no, seized by the coat. Bilbo gets laid down. He's trembling with fear. At this point, he thinks he's done for, and he feels trapped. He looks down the sides of the mountain and realizes that there's no way off this very, very high mountain. They are on the edge of a precipice and they would die from the fall. You have to fly to get down. And then he notices that the Lord of the Eagles and Gandalf are having a conversation. Now might be the best time ever to pick up a new language. Now, you might plan on traveling in the future or advancing your career, or maybe you just love learning something new. I've mentioned countless times how I find it so fascinating that J.R.R. Tolkien was so into all of these different languages and how much he had learned to speak and also understand the language at such a detailed level. And that inspires me to learn more about these things, like the Norse languages that were used for the names of the dwarves and Gandalf. All of that stuff is so cool. And that's why I'm excited to have Rosetta Stone as our sponsor this week. They offer 25 different languages, and they have 30 years of experience teaching everybody using a process that is faster to learn, and you retain the information longer. It's also great for learning pronunciation, and you can do it wherever you are, whenever you want, right on your desktop or your mobile app. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
When you need need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And then he realizes, well, he's not going to be eaten at all. It says here, the wizard and the eagle lord appeared to know one another. And there's this turn in the mood here. Gandalf seems to be on friendly terms. In fact, we learned that Gandalf healed their lord from an arrow wound at some point. So this does two things. It lets us know that these eagles are still actual real creatures, that they are biological creatures that can be felled by arrows. They are not gods descending on them, but also that Gandalf has healing abilities. So I think this is the first time that that's brought up. He has the ability to heal an arrow wound. Now, how he does that, using what means, is it some sort of magical thing? Is it some sort of, I don't know, treatment, some sort of medical treatment that he has learned over his years of being in the world? We don't really know. I would assume it has more to do with actual medical treatment than magic. But we also know from the books that the elves were aware of different healing techniques that included things that kind of seemed like magic sometimes. In fact, Aragorn learns healing from the elves in his time living in Rivendell. So it could be both. We don't really know. And then the narrator clears it up and says that prisoners means prisoners rescued from the goblins, not that they were prisoners here. And Bilbo, in his moment of panic, was misunderstanding what was actually going on. So Bilbo has a big mood shift. He realizes that they're going to escape, everything's going to be okay. And then we get this line. He was discussing plans with the Great Eagle, meaning Gandalf, for carrying the dwarves and himself and Bilbo far away and setting them down well on their journey across the plains below. Now notice, this is not setting them down all the way to the Lonely Mountain. No, this is on the plains below, a little bit further on their journey, but not that far. Now, why would that be? Well, first of all, it would be too easy, right? It would be too easy if the eagles just flew them all the way to their destination. They're not really on an adventure anymore. They just get there and the story only continues at the end of the story. That's not super exciting for us as readers. But I think more importantly, in world, the eagles are not meant to carry things around at long distances. They don't want to burden themselves with that. They have other things to attend to. They're not just a courier service. I discussed some of this in the bonus episode from last week as to one of the reasons why they didn't just fly the ring in The Lord of the Rings to Mount Doom and just drop it in. They don't work like that. They are not a courier service, and they have intentions of their own and the things that they want to focus on and the actual deal with the humans and the elves and the orcs and whatever down below isn't necessarily their concern in the same way that it is for everybody else. Now, that might feel a little contrary to the idea of, well, they were sent by Manwë to look over mankind, but when you think about the greater picture and the idea that Ilúvatar designed the children in a way that the children are supposed to take care of their own issues and rise to their own occasions to take care of themselves, then it kind of makes more sense that way. And then we get another justification. The Lord of the Eagles wasn't going to take them anywhere near where men lived. They didn't want to go as far as the places where there are men. Now, we don't know exactly at this point in the story where men live. I mean, clearly they could find a way to fly all the way to the Lonely Mountain, not going over lands that men live in because this area is sparsely settled, but it kind of makes sense. They're not going to deliver them to a place of safety among a bunch of people who they can find refuge with. And there's a good reason. They're afraid they're going to get shot at because we learn that, well, maybe sometimes they steal the sheep because they need to eat, because they get hungry, and that's what eagles do. They are still actual birds that have to live and survive, and they've learned that if they go too close to men, They're going to get shot at with arrows. Now, you might be thinking, wait a minute, weren't the Eagles also connected to the Numenoreans? Didn't they show up and look over the island? Wouldn't men be aware of these Eagles and not to shoot at them and those kinds of things? But in this part of the world, at this time in history, in the Third Age, a lot of that information has been lost, or the men who live in this part of the world may not have even ever known about those things. Now, they might be descendants of the Northern Kingdom of Arnor, even though that's not around anymore, but they also might just be people who have been living in this part of the world forever and don't have any history with the Numenoreans, don't have any mythology about these eagles. And if that's the case, I mean, think about an eagle with 180-foot wingspan flying down, trying to steal your sheep. You're going to get scared. That's going to be a scary thing. And you might call the town together in order to shoot arrows in order to try to get rid of them so they don't do worse damage to you. Who knows what something that large could be capable of? So Gandalf and the Lord of the Eagles have their discussion, and Gandalf says, "Very well, take us where and as far as you will. We are already deeply obliged to you. But in the meantime, we are famished with hunger." And then we get another comedic line from Bilbo. "I'm nearly dead of it," said Bilbo in a weak little voice that nobody heard, which is kind of cute because he can barely speak. He's so tired and worn out and hungry. And then the Lord of the Eagles says, "That can perhaps be mended." And they set up a fire. The eagles bring them food and fuel for the fire, and they start cooking as the dwarves like to do. And they eat rabbit and hares and small sheep. I have to wonder where they got the small sheep. And of course, it says here Bilbo's too weak to help because he's famished and dizzy and all of that. But we also learn that he's not very good at skinning rabbits or cutting up meat because he's used to having the butcher deliver it to him ready to cook. This is how much of a privileged life he has lived. He doesn't even know how to skin a rabbit. Now, I don't know how to skin a rabbit either. I have a feeling you probably don't either. Our world is a bit different from Bilbo's world, but I think that this is also another way in which we can relate to Bilbo. He doesn't do that. We don't do that. We live in relative comfort compared to a lot of people who have to find and catch and prepare their own food in order to make sure they don't starve. And Bilbo's not like that. He's not familiar with this. And then interestingly enough, the narrator notes, or Tolkien notes, that Gandalf too was lying down after doing his part and setting the fire going. So not only does he help get the fire going, Gandalf, fire, another connection there, but he also lies down. This is another, hey, everybody, Gandalf is in a human body. He's tired. He has to lay down and rest. He's not like a superhuman or a god. I mean, he is kind of a god, but he's still in a flesh and blood human body that needs to be taken care of. And the reason why Gandalf helps get the fire going, well, Owen and Glowin had lost their tinder boxes. But then we get this interesting line: dwarves had never taken to matches, even yet. And it feels kind of like an anachronism, right? Like, we've talked about this before. The technology in Hobbiton, in the Shire, feels like it's much more close to the modern world than in many other places in Middle Earth. In fact, in our world, matches weren't invented until 1826. So that kind of technology in some parts of this world, while the rest of the world still seems to be in some sort of medieval style setting, is a little bit odd, right? A little bit anachronistic. And then we get the wrap-up paragraph of this chapter. It says, "So ended the adventures of the Misty Mountains. Soon Bilbo's stomach was feeling full and comfortable again, and he felt he could sleep contentedly, though really he would have liked a loaf and butter better than bits of meat toasted on sticks. He slept curled up on the hard rock more soundly than ever he had done on his feather bed in his own little hole at home. But all night he dreamed of his own house and wandered in his sleep into all his different rooms, looking for something that he could not find nor remember what it looked like." So we've got a number of new patrons to welcome. Welcome to Chris and Fa and Grimdark Angel and Jesper H and Rebecca R. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you're here. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast to get ad-free episodes, bonus episodes. There are a ton of bonus episodes. So if you are going, hey, I wish I had more to listen to, go check that out. Thank you to everybody who supports us on there. And we've got three new reviews coming up. But first, we have to shout out all of our patrons, our VIP patrons specifically. And just real quick, thank you. We have 204 paid patrons right now. Thank you so much for all of the support. Also, you can join for free to make sure that you get notifications for when I'll take a week off and those kinds of things and anything else that we've got going on. But here, let's get through our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can do this without messing up. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cali Cat, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huan Is My Hero, Jemison, or Jameson, I messed that up, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Silly Marillion, TJT, Tom's the Bombadil, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much to all of you. And we've got some new reviews, like this one that is from Cake Tastes Good, smiley face, who says, Lore, 5 stars, Lore, 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 Lore. Thank you for that. I appreciate the 5-star review. This next one comes from Joanne, I hope I pronounced that correctly, A, who writes, amazing 5 stars. Just binged this podcast in 3 weeks. Now I want more. Keep up the amazing work. This is the podcast to rule all podcasts. Wow. Thank you so much for the compliment. And then this one from Justin. I clicked the button. Justin L. Rep, I think is how that's said. Definitely enjoying more than one episode. Writing this review for the fun of correcting Rocket Returns, who said there's only one episode. I'm on episode 13. The show's amazing. Just being ornery, but yes, there are a ton of great episodes. Just click further into the show and you'll see them. Thank you for correcting that. That is one of those things that drives me nuts sometimes is when people leave reviews, but they're like incorrect. Like they get mad at something and it's like, wait, that's not even... How did you get that impression? That's not how... There aren't just 13 episodes. Did you just not click? But, you know, people are people. That's how it goes. But I really appreciate all of you. Thank you for all of the reviews. Thank you for all of the support. And I'll be back next week. We're getting into the next chapter, so we've got more stuff to cover. And I hope you have a wonderful week. I know things can feel crazy in the world, so I hope you're doing well. And I'm going to go answer some comments and questions in the bonus episode this week. So let's move on to that. For those of you who are on the Patreon and getting those bonus episodes. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.